T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, I wanted to start this week's media call with a Problem Solvers Caucus initiative that we were able to get to our support level, and that's a farm labor bill dealing with the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. This was a piece of legislation on the Problem Solvers Caucus led by Jimmy Panetta of California and Fred Upton from Michigan, and co-sponsored by Zoe Loughran and Dan Newhouse in regards to the original sponsors of the bill. What this Farm Labor Modernization Act is all about is to take on the issue of immigration in regards to the piece of it that deals with our agricultural workers in particular. You know, as I go around the district and I talk to farmers, one of the consistent problems I hear every time I step on those farms is that they have an access problem to farm labor. That means actual people to do the work necessary to keep our farms in operation. And what this bill, which has over 200 organizations supporting it, it's come through months of work in the Problem Solvers Caucus as well outside of as well as outside of the caucus. It really reforms the H-2A program by providing access to more workers to come into America's workforce for the purposes of serving on farms. It makes dairy operations subject to the H-2A program, where it is not subject to it today. It provides for a path to legal status for folks that are here in the agricultural community and have demonstrated a continuous work history on our agricultural farms. And in order to try to prevent the future problem with security issues and border issues, implement the E-Verify system that would be put in place to make sure that there are checks in the system to ensure that the workers of tomorrow and of today are here legally, that have been processed through a functioning border program, and that the H-2A program is easily accessible as well as more effectively deployed in order to have access to the workers necessary to serve our farmers, not only in the 23rd Congressional District, but across the country. I'm glad the Problem Solvers Caucus put its weight behind this effort. And again, kudos to our Problem Solver Caucus leaders and Jimmy Panetta and Fred Upton, who really led the charge in a bipartisan way to get that support and do the necessary work over the months and months of effort here in order to get a bill that goes to one of the critical issues facing our farmers in the 23rd Congressional District, and that is access to a farm labor supply that this would go a long way to solving in regards to their needs. And so with that, why don't we open it up for questions. Celia Clark.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, Celia.
I was thinking about that, the Farm Labor Modernization Act. Clarify for me where it stands right now. Has it been signed? Has it passed? Where is it in the process of actually happening?
Yeah, so it's been dropped in the House by Zoe Loughran and Dan Newhouse, who are leaders in regards to the committees that have jurisdiction on this in regards to the House. We in the Problem Solvers Caucus just got to consensus on this so that it demonstrates that it's got viable bipartisan support through the caucus. And we're hoping to get a vote on this here very shortly. And then obviously where it goes in the Senate, I'll defer to the Senate. But we're working with them also because they recognize in the Senate that we have an access to labor issue in our family farms in particular across America.
Okay. Oh, great. All right. I'll start keeping track of that. Two very quick things. Sticking with Problem Solvers Caucus,
mm-hmm.
are you, and also this ties to the fact that you just were given an award by the Panetta Institute for your bipartisan efforts personally. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of rancor. Obviously, there's a lot of tension that's very partisan around the impeachment proceedings and in the House. And so I wonder if the Problem Solver Caucus or you individually are doing anything to try to sort of neutralize that or stem that so that the rest of the work, like this act and other things, can move forward in Congress.
Yeah, so I think what we're doing in the Problem Solvers Caucus to counter that further partisan divide that impeachment creating here in Washington, D.C., is to focus on problems that are impacting people on a day-to-day basis. So, for example, the Problem Solvers consensus vote that we reference on the ag labor bill we're talking about today was achieved on the same day that the impeachment inquiry vote occurred. And so we are continuing to try to focus on issues that are facing folks day to day. And today we just came out at 2 o'clock this afternoon with a Problem Solvers Caucus position on the issue of the Mexico-Canada trade agreement, calling for a timely vote to be held in the House on the Mexico-Canada agreement. That is something that's going to impact people in the 23rd District, in particular farmers as well as manufacturers directly. And so I think the best way we can, as a Problem Solver Caucus member, demonstrate that we're trying to break through this gridlock and this partisan divide is continue to work on the problems that need to be addressed, such as Mexico-Canada drug pricing, where we had a meeting with the senators yesterday, that are working with us on this issue, and continue to try to put our seal of approval behind efforts to get things done rather than focus on impeachment and those partisan issues that drive the country apart.
And I have a quick yes or no question. Can I go ahead with that?
Sure, go ahead.
First, there are some Republicans who are now saying that what the president did concerning Ukraine, phone calls, all that, military aid, was wrong, but it's not impeachable. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
I agree with that. I do not see an impeachable level offense here in anything that's been presented. And, as I watched the testimony yesterday and I said publicly yesterday, I do not see an impeachable level offense here. And, you know, as to the issue of what the president was raising, I think he was pursuing legitimate issues of corruption that have not been investigated, that have not been looked into from an investigative official perspective. And those are legitimate inquiries that need to be raised.
Okay. I have one more question, but I'll let it go maybe for the end, if that's okay.
Yeah, we'll circle back. Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Amina Golden from Tapping to Greater Orleans.
Hi, how's it going? All right, so my first question for you, Congressman, is, so this has been very divisive times in terms of the impeachment inquiry hearings. Mm-hmm. Once this is all said and done, what sort of steps do you think could be taken for the country to heal after this process?
I think what it's going to take is hopefully voices such as ours that are, you know, coming together, focusing on problems, Problem Solvers Caucus initiatives, creating the environment of trust and relationship that we have done between Josh Gottheimer and myself, between members on the Republican and Democratic side, and lead by that example of really trying to find common ground. And, as we go through this impeachment inquiry, I am concerned what it's doing to the country and tearing it apart further at its seams. And, at some point in time, I think the silent majority of America is going to step up as I hear it awakening across the country to say the work that we're doing trying to solve problems is what they want to have in representatives in Washington, and they'll start sending those types of individuals that are going to set aside a commitment to partisanship in order to try to find that common ground where 80% is a victory, not a defeat.
All right, thank you, and I just have one more question. So do you think that the articles of impeachment will go through and be sent to the Senate?
You know, I'll defer to the speaker controls how that goes down on the floor of the House. It seems to me as they have made a 100% commitment on the Democratic majority side to bring impeachment to a head in the House, and that means that they're already going to move that impeachment bill to the Senate. But maybe something will occur here that stops that from occurring. But everything I see right now is that they're moving forward with impeachment, and now they're just going through the process of getting to the conclusion.
All right, thank you.
WRFI.
Hi. I have a question about the farm workers that you mentioned earlier. How does the proposed federal act compare with the law passed in New York State in the 2019 legislative session?
And what exactly is that bill you're referring to in the state?
I don't have the name exactly, but it was passed this year.
So I'm not exactly sure what bill. There were multiple bills dealing with labor issues at the farm, where they were dealing with issues of overtime, farm labor, unionization issues at the state level. That is separate and distinct from what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is federal immigration policy encouraging farm workers to be readily available to our farmers, in particular our dairy farmers, to encourage a functioning H-2A seasonal work program that is effective and efficient based on technology and deploying tools there to have a functioning border where folks can come and go and participate in our agricultural pursuits. And it would also deal with issues that are related to farming that are necessary in order to meet the standards necessary to house folks that are coming through the H-2A program, making sure that there's a system in place for folks that have access to the necessary legal status so that they can stay here, not subject to deportation or removal, and legally perform the work that they want to do on the farm opportunities across the country.
Okay, thank you. I have another question, and I'm gonna jump to another topic, so please stay with me. So you may be aware that Maine recently passed a state law to extend ranked choice voting to the next presidential election. And recently in New York, State Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton has a bill to allow all counties, including the ones represented in the 23rd district, to choose ranked choice voting in 2022. I was wondering where you stood on that issue.
Yeah, I've watched this issue in Maine on ranked voting, and I really do believe this may be a solution that they're looking for a problem to solve. I mean, I think the concept of one vote, one person, is something that should be respected. It's ingrained in our DNA in American democracy. And when you get into the ranking system of votes that dilutes or that manipulates that one person, one vote type of standard. So I guess where I would come down is that I respect the one person, one vote standard. And if ranking voting does what I think it may do in regards to that, I am not looking to support reforms that are going to take away from that one person, one vote standard.
Excellent. I have one more question, if that's okay.
Okay, go right ahead.
Excellent. And jumping to another topic, I want to know what your position is on the 2002 AUMF, that stands for the Authorization for Use of Military Force in Iraq. This was used by the executive branch to authorize wars, I think like 18 military events, in the last 19 years. And some say that that takes away Congress's clear mandate. I'm wondering, what's your position on that?
So as you saw with our Syrian vote here recently, I do believe Congress should be voting on these issues of military force usage. I think relying on old provisions such as those dated AUMFs is not the right way to go, and Congress needs to do its job. And that's why I voted in support of the Syrian withdrawal of the American forces there, because I did not see them being authorized to be there by a congressional directive. And so therefore, I continue to be an advocate for Congress to do its job. And when men and women are asked to go into harm's way, that we make sure that Congress is held accountable and votes yes or no if that mission should occur.
Okay, thank you. I have one last question, if that's all right.
I really think we got to move to the next one, so I really appreciate it. So who's next, Will?
Greg Larson.
Hi, good afternoon, Tom.
Hey, Greg, how are you?
Doing good. Wanted to go back to the topic of impeachment. I guess the big revelation from yesterday's public hearings was from Bill Taylor. I guess he brought to the House's attention a phone call that took place between the president and Gordon Sondland, in which Sondland reported to one of Bill Taylor's staffers that the president cares more about the investigations of Joe Biden than the situation with Ukraine. What do you make of that particular piece of information that Bill Taylor testified about yesterday?
Yeah, you know, I watched that as others did, and saw the reports on it, and this whole overhearing of a phone call and who talked to who, and the triple hearsay type of standards that are being deployed here. Very tough to follow, to be perfectly honest with you, in regards to what the dots are trying to connect there. The bottom line is what the evidence that I have seen, again, does not rise to that impeachable offense. What I see is an inquiry being put forward about corruption by a sitting vice president of the United States, which is a public official. And that is, to me, something that legitimately could be pursued. I understand people are going to disagree with that conclusion. I understand people are going to counter that with their own interpretation of the evidence that has been put forward. But even if all that evidence so far is given the benefit of the doubt, I just don't see that high crime, treasonous type of behavior that warrants this impeachment.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thank you.
Rick Miller.
Congressman, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Rick. How you doing?
Good. Hey, do you believe that the president abused his office for political gain?
I don't see that in the evidence that's been presented to me. I see an inquiry based on corruption of the sitting vice president, and I think any time you're investigating corruption where taxpayer dollars are going to be deployed to or given to entities, be it countries or otherwise, I think that's a legitimate inquiry to be raised.
Thank you.
Denise from WXXR.
Hi, no, thank you. Thank you. My questions have been answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Jerry?
Jerry Zaremski, Buffalo News.
Hi. At the risk of being a little bit redundant, I do want to get back into this issue of Joe Biden's supposed corruption. I mean, when you say corruption by the vice president of the United States, that's a pretty strong statement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that if any of us are going to use it, we ought to say what that corruption is. So what is that corruption?
So what I'm looking at is you got a situation where the sitting vice president has a son in a position on a board of a company that has a checkered past in the country of Ukraine, where the son is getting paid $50,000 a year, and you got a CEO of Xerox who's getting paid $50,000 a month, and you got a CEO of Ursula Burns of Xerox sitting on that same board getting paid $20,000 a month, and you look at the resume of Ursula Burns versus Hunter Biden, and I think on its face, why is the sitting vice president's son serving on a board of directors when he has no experience in the oil and gas field? He has no experience running a Fortune 500 company like Xerox. He has no experience in the issue of corporate governance, and he's getting that type of salary compensation in that role. And so the question then needs to be asked, in my opinion, is something going on there that the vice president and then the vice president is clearly on record, saw videotapes of it, saw TV reports on it, talking about withholding aid to the Ukraine, dealing with the exact company upon which Hunter Biden is serving in this capacity at $50,000 a month. You know, on its face, to me, most Americans would say, what's going on here? And why is the vice president so focused on his own son's business in the Ukraine, where he's getting compensated at such a high level? Not saying there's corruption found there, Jerry.
That wanted that guy fired because thought he was corrupt.
But I'm sorry, what's that, Jerry?
I said there were people all across the international community who thought that the prosecutor that Biden wanted fired ought to be fired because he was corrupt.
And I understand that piece of information, but that doesn't conclude that there were corruptive forces in play here with Hunter Biden and the vice president. And so I'm not saying there's conclusive evidence that that occurred, but I'm saying on its surface, I think that's a legitimate line of inquiry to be investigated that was being raised on the situation between the sitting vice president and the son.
You know, it could be seen by some that this is a very partisan thing that the president did. So do you think that the president has any responsibility at all for the harsh partisanship in the country that you so criticize?
So, Jerry, it's not to me. What the president was raising was the issue of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a legitimate inquiry to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that is not a partisan statement. That is not a partisan conclusion. That is just an assessment of what I believe the evidence is showing me interpreting what's been presented to date.
Okay, thanks.
Yep, thanks, Jerry.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.